call the Senate Judiciary Committee to order. Good afternoon, everybody. Today, we have with us Senator Hughes, Senator Reinbold, Senator Keel, myself, Senator Chair, Coghill, the chair, I'm sorry, and we're kind of waiting for a vice chair. My guess is he's in another committee hung up. We have helping us today, we have Sean Ayers, and then we'll have Amy Bushnell, who's going to help us with Senate Bill 191. We got Nancy Hemingway helping us keep track of all of our amendments and all things, and Brett Collins helping us today with our LIO. We have several things on today's agenda. We'll consider the CS for Senate Bill number 8, which will have version S before us today. We'll have Senate Bill 191, which is, has a CS also, and a couple of amendments. Before we get started, we have several appointees that I was hoping to consider today. And what we'll do, I know we have one member for the State Board of Parole here with us, Tony Poe. Tony, if you want to come on forward, this is your opportunity, committee members, to listen in to somebody who wants to serve our state. Yeah, come on up. Tony, thank you for coming to the committee meeting today. We really appreciate it. You're up for the State Board of Parole.
That's correct.
Why don't you introduce yourself, a little about yourself, and why you'd be willing to serve on this board.
My name is Leitoni Matakayongo Tupou. I was born and raised in the country of Tonga in the South Pacific. And I came to the United States about 43 years ago to go to school. I met my wife in college. She was born and raised here in Juneau. She was born there in St. Anne. And we came here to visit her folks, and we never left Juneau since. So we have six children. Four of them are adult. I have two boys at home. One is 18 years old, and the other one is 16. All my children were homeschooled, and they all graduate from homeschool except the youngest one. While they were homeschooled, they also attended the University of Southeast Alaska. My employment with the state of Alaska, I spent my whole career working in the Department of Corrections. I serve as a correctional officer and probation officer. I also serve with the parole board as parole officers for a couple of years. During the Murkowski administration, I served in the Department of Corrections Commissioner's Office as a special assistant and became the director of the Division of Institution. My desire to serve in the Alaska Border Patrol, I feel that I have some contribution to do in terms of supervising and dealing with parolee in the state.
Thank you. You've actually served on the board for some time now?
This is my first week.
First week.
Okay. Yeah.
All right. I was going to say, have you had any hearings the first week?
Yes. We started on Monday. I started on Monday. And by the end of this week, we probably have 52 hearings.
Wow. Thank you for really, it looks like a lifetime of helping us in Alaska. I appreciate that. Is there any questions for Tony at this point? Looks like you stumped everybody. Probably it would be something that we would probably all ask you if you had more than one week in it, and that is about the process that you see. So from your perspective, brand new eyes, but not new to this world of, just to let you know, we have been joined by Senator Michicki. So with new eyes looking into this, what are some of the things that you see as a key responsibility that maybe we might know that from new eyes on your account?
Well, the last 4 days, being part of some of the hearings, I I realized the impact of SB 91 on the not only on the Alaska Border Patrol activities, but also on the number of offenders that have been out in the street and they are coming back because of parole violation. So the majority of the 4 days that we have spent on these hearings are coming back because of violations. And some of them commit new crimes.
And I think when we had our auditor talk to us, that was one of the things that they talked about with the Board of Parole, because we've changed that law, but you're dealing with a lag in that law at this point.
Yes.
Well, thank you for being willing to serve. Since the senator got back, I'll ask, is there any other questions? So what I'm going to do, Tony, is thank you for coming in, and I'm going to keep public comment open until we've interviewed everybody that we intend to interview today. So if you want to sit in and listen on that, that's fine. Otherwise, we'll excuse you.
All right. Thank you so much.
Thank you very much. We do have somebody who has been appointed to the Judicial Conduct Commission. And that is Jane Moores, who has joined us. And Jane, can you hear us?
Yes, I can, Chair Coghill.
Thank you. Well, why don't you put yourself on the record and share with us your reason for applying for this, a little bit about yourself, and any experience that will help us understand what you can do to help us in this Judicial Conduct Commission.
Thank you, Chair Coghill and members of the committee. My name is Jane Moores, and I live here in Juneau, our capital city. I apologize for not coming in person. I have a little bit of jet lag from flying overseas yesterday. As a member of the Alaska Bar for nearly 30 years, it has been a pleasure to serve on the Alaska Judicial Conduct Commission this last year. It was a partial term. And I would be honored to continue my service through reappointment for a full 4-year term. I believe you have my resume. I gave a full statement last year, and while I didn't prepare a formal statement this time, I'd be certainly happy to answer any questions you might have. I consider service on the Judicial Conduct Commission an extremely important role to play in upholding the integrity of the judiciary and holding our judges accountable to the public. And it's been a very good experience this last year, and I'd enjoy continuing my service and certainly be happy to answer any questions you might have for me.
Well, thanks, Jan. Welcome back to Alaska, and we hope that the jet lag was worth the effort. So is there questions at this point, Senator Hughes?
I don't have a question. I just want to say welcome home, sis, and put on the record that Ms. Moores is my sister, so I just want to get that on the record. That's considered a conflict of interest, but I can speak to her integrity, and she's a very intelligent and thoughtful person, and I think that she would do well in the job, and she did that in the partial term that she held, and I think that she would continue in that, Mr. Chair.
A glowing recommendation. So, Senator Machicki has a question, though.
Yeah, first of all, I want to just thank you for being able to survive being the sister of the senator next to me. But aside from that, you and I know you as well, Jane. I just the question I had was, do you feel like it's been a good fit? And do you have some projects in mind moving forward on the commission for any improvements that you have seen could be employed with the process?
Thank you. Through the chair, Senator McChicky, I have been very impressed with how the commission functions. I will say going into it, one thing I was sensitive to and was interested in seeing myself was the interplay between the various members. As you all know, there's three judges, three members of the public, and three attorneys. And I committed to you last year when I was in this position to make certain that every voice carried equal weight and was heard. And I have been very impressed in my experience with how the members of the public are not at all intimidated and have had very valuable input. And I feel like there is a mutual respect. No one has a greater voice than anyone else. And I think it's a highly functioning commission. As far as future projects or areas of improvement, I don't really see that. Our work is dependent on complaints received to the executive director, and it's been a very smooth, a very good process, I believe, that the public should feel very good about.
Thank you very much, Mr. Chairman.
It is it's nice to hear, and that was part of the question I was going to ask, a new set of eyes, and I think that's well said, Jane. Other questions at this point? Well, Jane, thank you for calling in to the committee, and it looks like I don't see any other questions, so we can release you to whatever duties you have left for the day. I am going to leave public testimony open because I do have some others who will be calling in shortly, and I would like to have public testimony available. But at this point, I don't see any. Is there any in the room for public testimony on these two appointees to date, at this time? I don't see any. So, Jane, thank you. We will dismiss you with our gratitude for your service.
Thank you very much.
So we do have others that will be calling in, and that's why I was going to leave the public testimony open. We have two others that we're going to call in on the Judicial Conduct Commission. We have Todd Fletcher and Robert Sheldon, who we're going to call in, and also Daniel Weatherly, who may call in on the Alaska Police Standards Council, but they have not called in yet. And so with that, what I'd like to do is set that aside for now, and what I'll do is I'll take a break, and we'll see if and when they call in where we're at in the bills. With that, what I'd like to do is take up Senate Bill 191, which is the trust bill that we had been talking about, some amendments. And I know there are going to be some questions on these. And let me take a brief at ease while I want to make sure everybody's got the information in front of them. So get yourself situated. We'll take a brief at ease. bring the Judiciary Committee back to order. Just to let you know, I got Robert Selden online. So what I wanted to do is get the CS for the Senate Bill 191 up before us. While we are waiting for people to call in, let's get this before us, and then we can have a conversation about this particular version. Senator Machicki.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I move CS for Senate Bill 191, Judiciary, before us, version 31-LS1370/M, as our working document.
And I'll object, and maybe we could have Amy come up and explain. It really is just a bill with the two amendments that we passed last week. But if you wouldn't mind, Amy, can you just run us through where those is that something that you can do real quick? All right. Put yourself on the record.
Good afternoon, Senate Judiciary Committee. My name is Amy Bushnell, staff to Senator Coghill. The committee substitute for Senate Bill 191, version M, has the two changes that were adopted in the previous committee in Amendment Number 1 and Amendment Number 2. The first one deleted the term "or a right accrued" in the Savings Clause in Section 7 on page 6, was in line 22.
All right, let's take a brief at ease. Back on the record, we got the version to Senator Hughes. So, Amy, please continue.
This is Amy Bushnell again. Yes, the first change was added by Amendment Number 1 that deleted "or a right accrued." That's on page 6. It previously was on line 22 of version A, and this is in section 7, the Savings Clause. The second change was from Amendment Number 2 that passed last meeting, and it added Section 7 as taking effect immediately within Section 9 on page 6, line 26.
Any other objection to having version M before us as a working document? All right, I'll remove my objection then, and we'll have then the CS for Senate Bill number 191, Judiciary, before us. And what I'd like to do then is go ahead and take another break. While we have this version before us, you'll have a couple of amendments that you can take a look at real quick. But we do have Robert Selden, so I'd like to lay this aside for a few minutes and recognize Mr. Selden, who is online with us. Mr. Selden, thank you for coming before the committee. Your work on the Commission on Judicial Conduct, put yourself on the record, and looks like you're out of state at this point, so thank you for calling in. Put yourself on the record.
Well, terrific. I am Robert Selden. I'm presently calling from Southern California in the middle of what seems to be the quite a bit of news these days. But I do have a short statement prepared, if I may.
Please do. Thank you.
Okay. I am Robert Selden, a third-generation Alaskan who is following my family's example of public service in Alaska for the last 88 years. I'm presently employed by companies or serve on boards for high-latitude capital formation and business endeavors in Alaska, Canada, Iceland, Greenland, and mainland Scandinavia. Since 2004, I've served on several boards, commissions, and councils for each of the past five governors of Alaska. This would be my fourth term at the Alaska Commission on Judicial Conduct. As you know, the commission investigates alleged judicial misconduct and ethical impropriety. Fortunately, most complaints are either unsubstantiated or non-jurisdictional in nature. My education extends to interconnections with the judiciary. We all know that rule of law is critical to the orderly functioning of an economy, but is also priced in as a component of Alaska's cost of capital. Alaska is priced as if it's an emerging economy rather than a developed economy, It's my hope that through a continued ensuring of confidence in the judiciary, that Alaska's cost of capital would come down over time. Serving on the Alaska Commission on Judicial Conduct has been an extremely satisfying experience, but one where it has become obvious that it is highly important that the Commission have orderly continuity of service as well as institutional knowledge retention amongst the Commission members. As you are likely aware, judge and attorney representatives are for a variety of reasons frequently unable to serve more than 1 4-year period. Public members help bring long-term continuity and knowledge. I hope to continue to be part of that, and I really appreciate your consideration today. Thank you.
Robert, thank you very much getting online. Is there any questions at this point for Mr. Sheldon? Robert, thank you for your service. There are no questions at this point. Thank you for calling in. Probably what I should do, though, go ahead and release you to whatever events you find yourself in California in. And I will be holding public testimony open. And at this point, I don't have any, but before I end this meeting, we will have any public testimony. If you don't stay on the phone, we'll keep you apprised of any comments that may be worthy to pass on to you.
Thank you very much. It's been my pleasure to be before everyone today, and I hope you all a good afternoon.
Thank you very much. Have a pleasant day.
Bye-bye.
So what we had set up, I will move on just to let the committee know that I had one other that was intended to call in on Commission on Judicial Conduct, would have been Todd Fletcher today, who has not been able to. And we told him we'd work with their schedule as best we could. And we had Daniel Weatherly, who also is at Anchor Point right now and may or may not be able to call in, but we had him set up for the Alaska Police Standard Council. If he does call in, what I'd like to do is kind of suspend where we're at and take those in. So with that, what we'll do is we'll go back to Senate Bill 191, if that's okay with the members of the committee. All right. Before us, then, is the version M of the CS for Senate Bill number 191. And there is two amendments that are before us. And Senator Keel had one that I think that he had tried to prove up. I know he did talk with some of the members, and I know he talked with my office. And that is the 1.7 before you. Senator Reinbold.
And I'd ask for permission to talk about the bill and its entire purpose before we get into the amendments.
All right. Pose the question, and we have Mr. Matthew Blotmacher, Mr. Jonathan Blotmacher, and we have Jamie Delman in front of us, and they probably can give you as good a history and context to this as I can. So do you have a specific question?
Okay, so basically what my concern is this bill, to the best of my knowledge, has one committee of referral, the Judiciary Committee. This bill happens to be sponsored singly by the chair of this committee, which is Judiciary. And it was introduced just a few weeks ago. We got a committee substitute approximately 138 or so, with the amendment approximately 138 today. When I did research looking into the IRS, we're the only state in the nation that has some of these things in it, like the gift trust. So I am not an expert by any means in this area, and that's why I have quite a few questions. We started talking about this bill 1 week ago. I called legal, and we spent probably an hour trying to understand this bill yesterday, and I was amazed how little Terry Bannister knew about this bill and how little she understood it and what the impacts were. So it gave me even more, you know, concern because I want to understand what I am voting on and the impacts of this. And so basically Terry Bannister asked me to ask the chairman, what was your purpose to, when you requested this bill, she couldn't tell me. What were you asking? What were you trying to achieve? And what is the purpose? So, and she said that it was confidential and that I had to ask you. And Amy came up, but she didn't have the amendments and I didn't have the committee substitute. And so therefore I have to do this on record because things are just moving so quickly. So Mr. Chairman, what did you request when you asked this bill to be written? Why did you request it and what are you trying to achieve?
It is true that I asked for the bill to be introduced, And I agreed to work with the trust group that had been put together. And they have come up with a variety of different suggestions for improving our trust law in Alaska. So the three issues in this one, we're dealing with dividing up a trust, and that is if you have different beneficiaries that have different requests, there is permissive ways to do it, and this gives a much more statutory clean way of dividing those trusts up to where beneficiaries can manage them differently. The other thing is defining what the community property income, how it's used, and then this new section, which is taking a gift and pushing it forward, dealing with a tax benefit gift, and passing it forward. And it is true that in this particular bill, that is a new concept. And so that's why we probably spent as much time on this new concept as anything, and that is the promise to transfer money or trust once you've found yourself deceased. And so it gives you the chance to make it, put it forward. And beyond that, what I can do is on this particular bill, Senate Bill 191, maybe I could have either Matthew, Jonathan, or Jamie Delman dive into if I got that exactly right. So who would like to go first on this one?
Chairman Coghill, this is Jonathan Blotmacher, and if you and Senator Reingold would allow me to address it, I would appreciate it.
All right, Jonathan Blotmacher, put yourself on the record, and thank you for calling in.
My name is Jonathan Blotmacher. I'm an attorney admitted in practice in Alaska, California, and New York. And although I'm now retired, although I still do work related to tax matters and legal matters, this goes back to 2012 when the estate and gift tax exemption were $5 million but were slated to drop to $1 million on January 1 of 2013. And a lot of people wanted to use that enhanced exemption so they could get property out of their estate and leave more to their family members. But very few people felt they could afford to give away $5 million, because if you give away property but you retain the right to use it, it's not out of your estate. It will be an incomplete transfer. So one of my colleagues at my law firm, Milbank Tweed in New York, and he and I had discussed this, came up with the notion of a gift by a promise. And in all states of the United States, including Alaska, a gift is not enforceable unless you get something back, some consideration for it. But there was one state, Pennsylvania, which by its common law suggested that you could make a gift by promise, and as long as it was in writing, it would be enforced. And a number of my colleagues decided that they would have clients do that. They couldn't afford to give away $5 million or $3 million or whatever, but more than $1 million. And they did it by going to Pennsylvania and talking to Pennsylvania lawyers. And this was on the common law, so it wasn't 100% clear. And they went ahead and did those gifts. Of course, it turned out that the Congress retroactively kept the $5 million exemption. And under the 2017 Act, they've actually increased it to $10 million, which is adjusted for inflation. In fact, now it's $11,580,000, and it will continue to be increased by inflation until 2026, when it's supposed to be cut in half. A lot of people, even if they don't think they'll have $11 million or $20 million, but think that maybe when they die they will have more than the then-existing estate tax exemption, would like to make gifts now. And we came up with a notion that we would make very clear legislation so it could be done. But in order to bring money into the state and in order to provide work for professionals in the state, we would allow it to be done under Alaska law only through a qualified gift trust. So So someone, say, from New York or California or Alaska itself would create an Alaska gift trust, and he or she would make a promise in writing to of a certain amount of money. Let's say somebody wanted to do the entire $11,580,000. They would put a note in basically for that amount. But yet they'd be able to keep the assets and use them for the rest of their life or until they felt they could afford to give up whatever the amount of the gift by promise would be. We think it will be, Alaska will be a leader again, as it has been in so many areas of estate planning since 1997. And we think it will bring work to the professionals in Alaska, and we think it will result in significant deposits of funds in the state of Alaska. So that's the purpose and that's the background. We think it's good, and we don't think that anyone will be harmed by it.
Senator Reinbold.
Should I continue? So this is the first time, in the last week, I would say, of my life that I've looked into trusts. So I have, several questions in regards to this. First of all, will this impact, when you look at the fiscal note, it says something, Civil Division accept contracts relating to the interpretation of Janus versus AFSMCE. Oh, go ahead. I'm sorry.
On this particular bill?
Yeah, it's on 191. Judiciary, yeah. So I guess what my question to you is, that just caught me just a little bit, a red flag for me. Will this impact any union trusts, health trusts, Native organizations in any way? Will this have any impacts?
Through the chair, Senator Reingold, this is Jonathan Blotmacher again. I don't think it will have any impact whatsoever, none. None. It will take no time for the state, and yet I think that quite a bit of money will come in, as it has with the other trust work that Alaska has done, I think it's all good. That case you named deals with another part of 191.
Through the chair?
Yes. You might continue on what part that has to deal with.
Sure. That's fine.
Through the chair, Senator Reingold, there is a case pending before the Supreme Court of the state of Alaska dealing with a question of whether if a couple makes their property community property, or to the extent they do, and there's a major potential income tax advantage to the couple, because when the first spouse dies, not just his or her half gets that income tax-free step-up in basis and all the inherent gain is forgiven for income tax purposes, but the survivor's half also gets that. There's an historic reason for that. The community property gets that treatment, but other forms of commonly owned property between spouses does not. So the state of Alaska in 1998 adopted community property by an opt-in system. And it's been extremely successful for Alaskans, and a number of people outside of Alaska have done it as well. I did it for many of my clients, and I can assure you that they have saved hundreds of millions of dollars because of that provision. And they don't have to move to California. They don't have to move to Texas. They don't have to move to the state of Washington to get community property. They just have to create an Alaska Community Property Trust. If you're an Alaskan couple, you do it by contract or by trust, either way you want it. The notion, again, is to make sure that all of the inherent gain in the property at the time the first spouse dies gets this step-up in basis because it's community property. The case before the Supreme Court of Alaska deals with a circumstance where the couple did create community property, but one of the spouses said that only applied to the value at the time that the contract or trust was created, and that any income or any appreciation occurring after it was converted to community property remained separate property. You can read the decision. I can't say it's absolutely crazy, except it's wrong, I'm confident. because it goes against the purpose of the Alaska Community Property Act, which is to have all the inherent gain, whether it was there at the time that it was converted to community property or thereafter, would get this tax benefit. And so what we're trying to do with this legislation, but excluding that particular case, the Supreme Court will decide it one way or the other, but we want to make sure that everybody else who's done it, and again, I'm confident that anybody else who's done it expected not just any appreciation to be there at the time it was converted to community property, but up until the death of the first spouse to die, would be get this really terrific tax benefit, which only couples in community property can enjoy.
Senator Reinbold to continue.
Oh, thank you. I am going to have quite a few questions, and I appreciate the indulgence of the chair. So I just at a high level, will this impact people with less than $5 million in any way in their life with trusts, estates, dividing trusts, et cetera?
Through the chair, Senator Reinbold, the division of the trusts, and I'm going to get a little technical, if I may here. Very often, a couple will create a trust together. They'll make a gift or whatever. And you can structure that trust so that it is ignored for income tax purposes. That's known as a grantor trust. And you can do it alone or you can do it with your spouse. And if you have a trust that's a grantor trust, this is actually good news. The person or persons who created that trust have to pay the income tax on it. And that's good because the trust will get its income and gains entirely free of tax because the burden of the tax is thrown back to the people who created the trust. Also, they can sell assets to the trust without any gain or loss. That's a special rule the IRS has for these kind of trusts that are called grantor trusts. One of the complications is when one of the spouses dies. And when one of the spouses dies, even if it's been a grantor trust up until that time, it's going to lose its status as a grantor trust with respect to half the property. And yet the survivor may want it to continue as a grantor trust. And this legislation will basically allow the trust to be divided when the first spouse dies, to continue that special grantor trust status. So it will be, a benefit to people who want to create a joint trust, because once the first of them dies, they can trace where the contributions came from, the husband or the wife. And if the wife is the survivor, they can keep the tax status there on that, Senator Reinbold. On the issue about whether or not these things are going to affect people with less than $5 million, the community property may well be, because if husband and wife have, say, $4 million of appreciated assets and it's community property, and let's say the husband dies first, the entire inherent gain on the whole $4 million will be forgiven because it's community property. That's a special rule in the Internal Revenue Code. If they own it just jointly or they own it separately, only the half owned by the husband who died first would get that step-up in basis. So this helps people who have $1 million or $5 million or $100 million. They all get the benefit of that. It's a very attractive thing, and I think, and Jamie can address this, but I think virtually all married couples in the state of Alaska, at least those in a first marriage, opt to have their property treated as community property. They still own it 50-50, but now they'll get that special benefit when the first spouse dies. On the one about gift by promise, whether you have $4 million or whether you have $11 million, some of the Democrats have proposed to reduce the estate tax exemption down to $3.5 million, which means even if you only had $2 million now, when you die, you have $6 million, you're going to have to pay estate tax on the $2.5 million excess over $3.5 million. This will allow those people to make a gift by a promise, not have to give up their property, but make a gift by promise, which will use part of the current exemption, which is not recaptured when they die. So, for example, if someone had, say, $11 million today, and she wanted to make sure her family got the benefit of that when she dies, she doesn't have to give away that $11 million. She can just say, I'm making a promise to pay $11 million to this trust by the time I die. And that will mean even if the exemption is only $1 million when she dies later on, she or her family will have gotten the benefit of using an $11 million exemption, even though she's retained the use and benefit of that property for the rest of her life or for as long as she wants to.
To the chair.
Senator Reinbold, continue.
Okay, so as you know, Alaska has a lot of domestic violence, abuse, et cetera. There's also financial abuse. And I guess basically what I'm trying to figure out is there any loopholes with this joint or separate or communal property, any new, because we're the first in the nation to do some of this stuff. And that's why I think this bill really needs to be looked at very, very carefully. Is there any loopholes at all that you can anticipate for financial abuse in this bill?
Right. Through the chair, Senator Reinbold, I don't think there's any potential of an abuse. Let me give you an example. Let's say a wife has $10 million today, and it's her separate property. It's not community property. She could give it to anybody she wants to. She doesn't have to tell her husband. She doesn't have to advise him. She can give it away. Now, that may be a rotten, stinking thing to do to her husband, but that's the power you have when you own property. You can give it away to whomever you want and cut off any rights that the state would give to her husband to her property when she dies, because she doesn't own it anymore. That's there right now, and I appreciate that there is domestic abuse and there's financial abuse of spouses. That's not just true in Alaska, but it's every place in the union. I don't think that this aggravates the situation for the spouse. And again, I think that, you know, this is for people who want to use their exemptions today and are concerned that it's going to be cut in half in 2026, and I think there's an excellent chance that if the Democrats, either in 2020 or 2024, take the White House and maybe the House and Senate, they will cut it back. In fact, as you may know, Senator Reinbold, they've also even proposed a wealth tax. I'm not sure this will do anything about that wealth tax because we haven't seen what that legislation would look like. But the IRS has told everybody recently, if you use part of that $11 million exemption today, we will not take it back when you die. But you will have lost your chance to use it. So today I could give away $11 million and it would be complete and that much would be out of my estate. But if I don't use it and the exemption is $5 million or $2 million or whatever it is, I've lost that extra exemption available. And, you know, over a long period of time, people's wealth can increase. And they may well say, well, it's possible I will have more than the exemption that the law will allow when I die. It might only be $1 million or $3.5 million. And I want to make sure that if I can use what I have today and its potential growth, because one of the benefits of this bill, when you make a gift by promise, you can make it for more than what you own. And as a consequence, you can, you know, really protect yourself and your family from tax when you die. And we think that's a very good thing, and we think it'll make Alaska look good. The original legislation, which you passed in 1997, the Alaska Trust Act, has now been adopted in 19 states in the United States. And Alaska gets the credit for being the first, and I still think the best. And it's brought a lot of business in the state. And my nephew Matt can answer this question there, but it's tens of millions of dollars that wind up in banks in Alaska, which is loaned out or used by people in Alaska to buy homes and help their businesses and other things.
And we think, again, this will help the state. We think it will help the professionals in the state. We think it will help the people in the state. And it will also allow people from out of Alaska to use these laws. And we think it's all very beneficial.
So, Senator Reinbold.
Okay, thank you, because this is new to me, and I think I put this on record before, but I've had two bad experiences with trusts, so I'm not a big fan of them. So I'm just because of my own personal experiences, and that's why I'm really, really trying to understand this. And did you say your nephew was Matt? Did I mishear that?
Yes, ma'am. My nephew is Matt Blotmacher, who's on the phone. He's the president of Peak Trust in Anchorage, and he's on the phone, and he can tell you, I think, pretty close to a pretty round number how much is in the institutions in the state of Alaska because of the legislation the state has passed, which is used by the financial institutions in the state, again, to give money to people to buy homes and run their businesses.
Okay, so through the chair.
Reinbold.
So I think I understand some of the good stuff in the bill, that it's bringing investment. This investment could be loaned out. I think I understand, you know, part of the big picture stuff to make attractive for, and, you know, to bring money. Where my concerns are is, you know, any potential abuse and, you know, communal property. I don't know if this is in any way changing communal property or the definition. I thought, my understanding was, if anything was earned during the time of, you know, spouses were married, that is automatically communal property. Am I correct there? And would this change that in any way?
Through the chair, Senator Reinbold, when an Alaskan couple or one of the married persons in Alaska acquires property, it is not community property. It's his or her separate property. So if your husband made $5 million, that's his money, and you have no right to it. Now, in a divorce, the judge might award some of it to you, and under Alaska law, you are entitled to a minimum share of his estate when you die. But you're not entitled to any of that. You don't own any interest in it, and that's the way it is. But if a couple chooses to have community property, let's say your husband said, I'm going to treat this $5 million is community property, you would instantly own half of it. And you'd own half of it even if you got divorced, even if you died, even if he died. I lived in California for a number of years, which is a community property state, but I spent most of my time in New York, which is not a community property state. And community property is a much more sane system for couples to own property. But in Alaska, it's not automatic. In the other nine states that have community property, it's automatic. If you don't want it, you have to elect out. Alaska is like Germany, where you start with a separate property regime, but you can elect into community property. And this is a major advantage for the people in the state of Alaska, because, again, when the surviving spouse dies, you'll get that double step up in basis, taking away all the inherent gain. Couple doesn't have to do it if they don't want to, but if they want to do it, it's there. It's a very sane system to me for couples to do it. So we don't think it'll distort or provide for any fraud or anything else. The community property agreement, if they do it by contract, or the community property trust, if they do it there, has to be in writing. And in fact, in the legislation, I can't show it to you right now, but we can send it to you. If you do an Alaska community property trust, there has to be a big, bold statement at the very beginning of the trust in very large type. I think it's size 14 type, that warns the people signing this that this could have significant financial and legal ramifications, and you ought to seek advice about that. So if a husband wanted to dupe his wife and say, sign this thing whereby you're going to, you know, change your community property, your separate property into community, so I own half, there's that big warning. Now, maybe he's got such power over her that he can just say, give me half or give it all to me. I've known circumstances where that's happened, where a husband has preyed on his wife. I was involved in a case in California about that, where the wife was just hoodwinked by her husband. We think that this is very, very safe, we certainly hope that everyone will appreciate that these measures that we have in this bill are good for the people of the state of Alaska and can also, to some degree, be used by people outside the state of Alaska.
Sure.
Senator Rainbow.
So I guess basically, I'll tell you, you know, when you say you're working with people from New York and California, I think actors, actresses, and all that. And so immediately I get a big red flag. I mean, just to know where I'm coming from in regards to this. But also this bill may or may not deal with this, but this is just blowing me away to think that a mother could stay home and raise her children and that man goes out and makes money and she has no rights to that money. I mean, you know, she can, if they get a divorce, they minimal share and it's his. I mean, this goes contrary to everything that I thought was law in the state of Alaska. So maybe you're bringing up something completely different in regards to this, but it sounds like, am I stating that correctly?
Yes, ma'am, you are. In Alaska and in virtually all but the 9 states, Louisiana, Texas, New Mexico, Arizona, California, Nevada, the state of Washington, and Wisconsin, unless the couple lives in one of those states, if one of them acquires assets, you know, you've got a stay-at-home mom raising the kids, doing the best thing in the world she can do, in fact, you know, allowing her husband to go out and do it, she owns none of that property, none of it. She has no say over it. She has no say as to how it's spent. She has no say how it's invested. Now, I told you, I've lived under a community property system with my wife in California for a number of years and in New York. Now, Betsy and I share everything. In fact, my nephew will tell you that I've given her most of my money. But putting that aside, in Alaska, you don't have it. One of the things that the state of Alaska could do is to say, we're not going to have opt-in community property anymore. We're going to be like the other states. We're going to have automatic community property. So if one of the spouses goes out and makes money, automatically half of that's owned by the other spouse. But Alaska hasn't gone that far. The only state in recent times that has gone that far is Wisconsin. Back in the late 80s, Wisconsin adopted what is known as the Uniform Marital Property Act, which is basically a form of community property. And it was automatic. And everything the couple had acquired, it was automatically now 50-50 between the husband and wife. When we brought up the concept of community property in Alaska, the legislators that we spoke to were somewhat concerned about automatic, so we proposed, well, give the couple an opportunity to choose community property. And again, as I've said, I think it is a much saner, fairer system than what all the other states have, having community property, that is.
Senator Keel.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. A question for Mr. Blattmacher. On that and I guess right to property or gain during the marriage. I mean, you mentioned that it could be different in a divorce situation. I mean, and I wonder if you could explain that to me. I would think that if I gave away everything that's in my name, and my wife said, "That's it, Bucko, we're splitting the sheets," and we went in front of a judge, there she does have some. Can you explain how a judge in Alaska evaluates that then, and splits up the assets of the marriage?
Through the chair, yes, sir, I'll do my best. And Jamie, I'd like you to correct me if I'm wrong. I've never done real divorce work in the state of Alaska, but it's my understanding that when a couple breaks up, the judge has the power to determine the division of assets that's been acquired during the marriage, property that would have been community property if they'd lived in a place like the state of Washington. So if the couple has acquired, let's say, $5 million of assets, whether it's homes or businesses or whatever, the divorce court can decide what part should go to the husband and what short part should go to the wife. And at least in New York, when you have a relatively long-term marriage with children, even if you've had a stay-at-home mom, wife, and the husband has gone to work, it's usually pretty much 50-50. The judges are allowed, and I think this is true under Alaska law as well as New York, The judge can consider anything that the judge thinks is proper to make that determination. And again, in a long-term marriage with kids, it's usually a 50-50 deal. Although, as we know, you know, having title to something, you're in a more powerful position. So if the husband has made the money and he's put it all in his name, it's going to be much more difficult as a practical matter to disgorge as much as if it were automatically 50-50. In the state of Washington, I'm told, even though they have community property, so you start off with an automatic 50-50 division of community property, the judge can go back in and award one of them more of it if the judge thinks that that's the proper thing to do. Like perhaps you have a spouse who's disabled and can't work. The judge might give that spouse more than just the half that he succeeded to once it broke up. But under the law, as far as I know, there is no clawback. So if the husband gives $1 million to his girlfriend and before he and his wife break up, the judge can't reach back and take it, although in awarding what, they've acquired during their marriage, he could award more to the wife to kind of make up for the fact that the husband had given part of his property away.
Let's get Jamie Dolan to just chime in on that particular point. It's part of the context, but it's not necessarily heavy language in the bill. So, Jamie, just on what a court may do in the dividing of a marriage.
Sure. Thank you, Senator Coghill and members of the committee. For the record, my name is Jamie Dolan. I'm not a divorce lawyer. I have not actually been involved in that equitable distribution that I think Jonathan was discussing, but I do know that the judge would, to the extent there was not community property, the judge would look at all facts and circumstances. I certainly think if a gift had been made to a third party shortly before the divorce was initiated, that would be considered as part of the equitable distribution in terms of the judge's analysis.
Thank you. Senator Reinbold, to continue the questions.
So I guess I'm kind of just taken back, I guess, is the best way to say it, when the former person said that it's the most sane way that to have a woman stay home and take care of the kids and let the husband just have all the wealth, basically, and that's sane. I think it's insane. That is not registering me. I think there's something.
Senator Reinbold, I think you got it exactly backwards. He said community property would be the most sane way.
He said that it's opt-in, that it's an opt-in.
We have an opt-in part, but what he was saying is a community property would be the most sane way. Maybe, Mr. Blotmacher, if you want to clarify that before she goes, that's what I understood you to say.
You are correct, Chairman Coghill. That's what I said. I think community property, one that is automatic, is the sanest kind of marital property regime a state can offer its residents. In Alaska, at least, you can make a contract to have that. But I'm living in California. Everything that I earned, because my wife was a stay-at-home mom, we have a disabled child, was automatically half Betsy's. No matter how I got it, it was half Betsy's. And I think that that's the fairest and most sane kind of system that a state can have for its residents.
And I would totally agree with you in regards to this. The chairman stepped out, so I'm really happy that we got that clarified. But what my understanding is that in Alaska, you have to opt into that. Is that what you were saying?
That is correct, Senator. A couple doesn't have to do it. Mm-hmm. If they want to do it, they can. Very often when people enter a second or third marriage, they'll have a prenuptial agreement. So, they may have special rules. They'll make up, their own rules as to what they think is fair. But, someone in a first marriage situation may decide that the tax benefits that they'll get by community property and the fairness it represents is there. So if the husband says, I want to go work for a nonprofit organization while the wife is out there doing something where she makes a lot of money, he knows that he's going to be protected. The same way that if they have a child, and she says, look, sweetheart, you stay home with the kids. I'm going to continue to work. I make more money than you. They can do that. But if they've adopted community property, he's going to get half of what she earns. And vice versa, if she's the one who stays at home or works for a nonprofit and makes less money than he does.
So before we go any further, I'm just going to take a brief break on this conversation to let people know that I, at this point, because of the length of the discussion, and I'm still waiting for some call-in, I don't intend to take up Senate Bill 8 at this point, just to let you all know. And so there are people waiting online, and my apologies to them, but I think it would be wise just to let you go, and we'll pick it up at another time, and we'll return to the conversation on Senate Bill 191. But I wanted to appreciate those who had been online listening to this debate, and my apologies. But I think in order to do that bill justice in this, we just need to take the time, and so my apologies. Mm-hmm. Senator Reinbold, to continue.
And Mr. Chairman, I want to say thank you. I once for the clarification. I think that was an important clarification, and also just for the indulgence in regards to understanding this bill at a deeper level. So I guess at a high level, right now, does Alaska need to look into that? I don't know when would I ever opt in for it to be community property. For one, I mean that's that option. I mean, I don't. You know, let's talk about that.
Senator, I there are a few things that I know that many people do. For example, you have joint checking accounts. You do when you register vehicles, quite often register them together. There are those kinds of things. But if you want to look into the requirement to be community property, that would probably be separate from this particular bill, but it obviously has brought to light that particular issue.
And Mr. Chairman?
Yes.
I'm thinking about doing an amendment in regards to that. I think it would be wonderful if Alaska was not an opt-in, that it was, you know, like the most sane way, what we were talking about, for it to be automatic community property. I think that, you know, it reduces the opportunity for abuse. And so I think I'm in agreement with you and the...
So, Senator, I don't know that it would fit in this bill, and I would probably, something we would ask our ledge drafters, if it would be within the same subject, because this is dealing about trust and trust division and the powers of trustees. So it may not fit into it necessarily. Marriage law is a little different code than 13, I think. So I think it's an 18. So I'm just saying it out loud. I think it would be a little different topic. Anyway, Senator Reinbold.
And what I'd like to ask is maybe one of the two individuals that we've been talking to online, in 1998, I guess you said something about you were suggesting an opt-in language. Were you part of this? And does this have anything to do with the trusts at all, or would that be a completely different section?
This is Jonathan Blotmacher, again, through the chair. The principal drafter of the Alaska Community Property Act in 1998, and I met with I came to Juneau, and I met with virtually every legislator, and I believe the lieutenant governor about it, and I think it passed unanimously, and I am unaware of any abuse whatsoever that's come out about that. And I'd be delighted to talk with you, Senator, other than here, about, some of the other things that we think would be good for Alaska to do, and also talk about whether Alaska should have an automatic community property system like Wisconsin adopted.
That'd be awesome. I mean, I would absolutely love to talk to you in regards to this and see if it fits in any way to this bill.
So, Senator, up to this point, I've been trying to be patient enough to get us to the general context of this bill, but we do have a couple of amendments, and we're down to the last 15 minutes of the issue. Would you be willing to entertain the amendments, or do you want to continue on fleshing out some of the other reasons for this particular bill?
I guess I still have quite a few questions in regards to, you know, why words were changed on line 5 from consider to treat. I mean, I have lots of technical questions in regards to the bill, and I'm not sure if it's better, you know, to do one or the other first. But I just have a lot, because there's new sections. Like section 4 is a completely new section, promise to transfer money to a trust. And I have like 6 questions in regards to that. I mean, there's just so many. And then I have a big red flag in section, and I really tried to do this since Wednesday, but Ledge Legal just did not have the information that I needed. But section 3 is a new about a trustee, and how much they can charge. I don't know if there's limitations or any type of accounting there, but I'm just trying to stop any forms of abuse. And I think that's basically, because I think the bill is after some good things, and I think the amendments are really important. So I don't mind if we jump ahead to the amendments, but I definitely have some questions, about the bill itself.
If you would indulge me, I'd like to entertain the amendments at this point, and then I could lay the bill aside and let you go ahead and do some private investigation. Okay. We took up over an hour of investigating just the main context of this bill, and I hope that would at least satisfy you enough to put these amendments in or out, and then that'll give us the context of the bill, and I'd be willing to bring it back and let you maybe take some time. Okay. And my suggestion is, rather than the legislative legal, ask these and maybe even a conference call. I'd be willing to do a conference call with you on just going through those questions so that I don't have to type everything into the record, but just the final fine points.
Mr. Chairman, can I make a statement? I hope this does not offend anybody, but what my problem is this bill has one referral. You're carrying it. Mr. Harris is a lobbyist. Then I'm supposed to be calling the people that may or may not have, you know, financial benefit. I don't know if they have multi-million-dollar, $100 million clients. I don't know, but I'm trying to look for an outside, you know, person. I mean, I think these people are being wonderful with me right now, so I don't want to offend them in any way. But I don't understand trusts.
You don't offend me by asking good, legitimate questions, and I want you to feel comfortable that this is a reasonable thing to do for Alaska. But I was just trying to be helpful to you on pointing to you people that I think who work within the industry who know it. You're right to be suspicious of your senator chairman, and it's always wise to make sure that you know what you're doing. I have no problem with that, but I'd be willing to give you the opportunity to do whatever homework you need to do to satisfy those questions.
And I appreciate that, Mr. Chairman, because we're the only committee referral, and that really causes me concern when it was just introduced a couple weeks ago, and I have honestly no idea the impacts. And that's where whenever I put myself in a situation, how is this going to impact Alaskans, you know, because I have to be, as you have to be, the person that passes a law, and it's going to have impacts on their lives. And hopefully these are good. You know, that's what I'm thinking your intention is good with no abuse.
I think you're asking a question that any reasonable Alaskan would ask. And this is a very dense world of law. And so I'm trying to be clear to you that I want these answered as honestly and as clearly as we can. That they're being, we're being forthright for Alaskans, and we're being both not only a benefit to those who invest, but a benefit to those who will be benefactors.
Thank you.
And so, with that, what I'd like to do, if it's all right with the committee, I'd like to have Senator Keel go ahead and move amendment that he has before us. We'll call that amendment number 5, if that's all right. Senator Keel.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I move 31LS1370/A.7 as Amendment 5.
And we'll call it number 5, and I'll object and let you explain some of the language that you have given us here.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. This is very much like an amendment I offered and withdrew the other day. Senator Machicki quite rightly pointed out that it is possible that one of these notes could be guaranteed by the trustee, by someone else. And so he worked with my office and one of them, Mr. Blotmacher, as well, to come up with this language, which I think accomplishes the goal. The buyer will get some disclosure, have an opportunity to understand just what they're buying, and unlike the first draft I had proposed, it doesn't require a disclosure of something that may not actually be the case. So my thanks to Senator Machicki for that.
Senator Machicki, are you satisfied with the comments that you put into it?
I am. The amendment has been amended to the point of where it no longer hurts the bill. I stand by my initial response that it is unnecessary, but I'm okay with the way it's written.
All right. Senator Reinbold, do you understand? Do you want to ask any questions on this one?
Through the chair, I actually liked the old amendment better. I did. I think it was more clear. I liked the bold text. I just thought it was a much more powerful. I think this weakened it tremendously. A little disappointed, but I'm going to support it. I'm not going to, block it. But I actually did think it was much better before.
Okay. Well, with that, I'll withdraw my objection. We'll take it in. And my intention then is to bring it back before us as a drafted bill. With that, I'd like to then have amendment number 5 put in, and then I would like to move amendment number M.1, which we'll call amendment number 6. And Senator Machicki, if you...
I'll object for a description, please.
So I'm going to ask Amy to come forward. She helped draft this. And so it deals with the community property. And so, Amy, if you could just give us the intent of this particular amendment.
Yes. So, again, for the record, my name is Amy Bushnell, staff to Senator Coghill. And this amendment, M-1, it follows the same intent of a previous amendment that was withdrawn by the chair. That the purpose of the amendment is to help with good practice without being too restrictive in devaluing the notes. We want couples who intend to make a gift to work together if they were to make the gift, and if they are not making the gift together, that community property will not be affected. The amendment is on page 6, following line 5. It would add a new subsection to the gift trust section, section 4, that if a married person makes a promise under A of the section, property owned as community property or as tenants by the entirety, joint property, by the married person and the spouse of the married person during life of the married person, sorry, a lot of repetition there, may not be used to pay the obligation represented by the promise unless that spouse has provided the spouse's express written consent to the payment. So this is saying if they both have a right to the property, that one person cannot simply just give it away. It is my understanding this is already partially in statute that you can't just gift out something that's not yours, whether by promise or by action in the moment, but we wanted this to be expressly clear in this new concept we're creating.
So any questions? We still have Jamie Delman, Jonathan Blotmacher, and Matthew Blotmacher online. Senator Reinbold.
So I've literally read this. We didn't get it, I think, till 1:40 or so. I mean, I didn't see it. So I've read it. It's had to be committee work because we weren't given this in advance. So I just want to make sure something that happened before this, like if a husband makes the money, the wife stays at home, and he decides to gift his entire retirement to, let's say, the University of Alaska, is he allowed to do that?
Senator Reinbold, through the chair, it is my understanding that a retirement as well as pension is personal property, and that in the state of Alaska, the division is an equitable division, which I am told is very, it's almost never 50-50 division. The division can be decided on different factors of the lifestyle of their children that they've become accustomed to, as well as who has gone to work and who hasn't, and whether they're going back for education. So to answer your specific question about their retirement, that would be just theirs to decide a gift to be.
Except for retirement can be, I think, shared. So maybe, Jamie, you deal with Alaska law probably a little more than on that particular issue. So I'm fact-checking my staff a little bit on this, but...
Thank you, Senator Coghill. For the record, this is Jamie Dillman. Retirement specifically, because it's normally there are federal laws that sort of supersede Alaska state law with respect to retirement in many instances. And for the most part, in order to if for many retirement plans, in order to change the beneficiary, the spouse would have to sign off on that, I think. There may be exceptions to that, though.
Okay.
But as a general rule, an asset in a marriage where there is no community property is upon divorce would certainly be subject to equitable division. But prior to divorce, an asset that is a separate, the individual property of one of the spouses, the other spouse would not have any control over.
All right, thank you. Senator Reinbold.
Okay, so I think this amendment is important. I think it's addressing something very important. So I do like the amendment. So don't get me wrong when I'm trying to discuss this. But basically, I wanted it to say something about being notarized and being fully aware of what they were doing, because some maybe the woman is an accountant and understands the law and understands what's going on, and maybe the husband doesn't, and they trust and they just sign away. And I guess I'm just trying to. My whole goal of everything I'm doing today is trying to prevent abuse, loopholes, people scamming, people taking advantage of other people. You know, that's my whole ultimate goal. So I am honestly coming from a genuine place. And so I'm trying to figure out if this needs to have any stronger. It says the spouse has expressed written consent to the payment. I don't exactly know what that means, and I may be getting too much into the weeds. You know, but I don't know if it needs to be notarized. I don't know if it needs to be, you know, with a full and complete understanding. I think this is a step in the right direction, but maybe it's not as strong as what I was hoping it to be. But if you could.
If I can get Jamie to speak to us about the express written consent, it seemed to me like that would be rather strong. But maybe those who practice in this arena have a better idea. Jamie, is there any comment on that particular part?
Senator Coghill, written consent is used in our statutes in many places. I certainly don't have any personal I don't feel that strongly either way about it being notarized. I mean, a notarized document is just acknowledged that it was actually the spouse that signed it. You know, I don't have a particular problem with adding the word an acknowledged written consent to the payment. But, you know, written consent is without saying notary, is found often in our statutes. I don't know if this is particularly different. I mean, for instance, if you look at, Alaska statutes, 13, I'm not expecting anyone to know this, so I'm just going to, this is, but it's Alaska Statutes 1312 through 213, which is in the context of waiving rights, marital rights at death, and those rights can be waived by a written waiver signed by the spouse. It doesn't require any sort of notary, for instance.
Also, in this new section, Jamie, is in the promise to transfer money. The promise to make it enforceable has to be in writing, signed by the person, delivered to the trustee of the trust. And so, it would be mirroring pretty much the way the promissory note is put together, and the express consent of any spouse at this point. So I think those would be equitable, and they would be probably put together in some form that would be signed by both parties, if I understand correctly. Do you understand it that way?
Senator Kaka, would you repeat just the last part of what you said? I'm sorry.
That if there was a requirement for a spouse to sign it, it would be within the same form as putting this trust together under the promise of transfer, and the promise would have to be put in writing and signed by the person, as well as a spouse that may have to be apprised of this.
Senator Cockell, I think that's right. I mean, the statute is not requiring that they be in one document, but if a spouse that was making the promise wanted to be able to pay on the promise using marital assets, then the spouse would, at the time the promise is made, would want the contemporaneous consent of the spouse, of the other spouse.
Let's do this. We're down to the last 2 minutes. Senator Reinbold, if it would be all right with you, I'd like for us to put this in, print it up, and then I'll bring it back before us, and that will give you the opportunity to review it in total.
Can I ask a tiny little question really quickly?
Sure.
Does this help close any loopholes? Does this help protect, you know, possibly a vulnerable spouse? I mean, I think that's why I think I like the amendment, but I just, you know, that's my whole intent right now. Would this help close any potential loopholes?
Through the chair, Senator Reinbold, the intent of this section is yes, to the extent that there could have been a loophole before this amendment where, I don't know if it would be a loophole, but where you could have if one spouse was up to no good effectively and wanted to promise marital property, and basically make that marital property subject to an obligation that the other spouse was not part of, that could be problematic. And so the idea behind this amendment is that with respect to marital property, if you want that marital property to be encumbered by this gift promise, then that marital, the other spouse has to consent to it in writing.
Okay, then one tiny more question. The difference between...
You're running us over, and I have Senator Keel in line for a question.
Okay.
Can I get him first?
Sure.
Senator Keel.
Mr. Chairman, not a question so much. This is a good amendment. It doesn't quite serve the same purpose as the notice amendment, so I may want to talk more about the spousal notice after this, but I'll support this amendment. Thank you.
Senator Reinbold.
Okay, so I guess just the difference between a spouse's express written consent and the spouse's acknowledged express written consent, I'm not sure if that's going to help, and I don't know about putting the word notary in here, you know, just to make sure that they're the third person that may have to explain, you know, if one person is an expert and the other one is not, just to make sure that there's no loopholes for anybody to take advantage of anybody. I understand that the ultimate goal of this bill is to take tax advantage of in Alaska versus some other states, but I'm more interested in protecting, you know, in spousal relationships and prevent abuse. I don't like the Swiss banks or whatever. It almost seems like that's what we're doing up here is having a special.
What I'd like to do, if it's all right with you, I'd like to withdraw my objection, have this folded into it. We can print it up as the version that would be before us, and then you can spend the time digging into the remainder of your questions. And then Senator Keel will also have some questions once this language is seen in context, if that's all right, and then we'll bring the bill back before us.
I would, and through the chair, I don't know if they want to answer that question or not, but I would be definitely pleased to work with Senator Keel because I think the, you know, what the purpose of the amendment, I'd like to make sure that it achieves what he wanted it to. So thank you.
I withdraw my objection, Mr. Chairman.
Any further objection to Amendment Number 6? All right. With that, we'll have Amendment Number 6 in. We'll hold this bill over as amended. And I'm actually going to leave public testimony open on our appointees because I have three others that are under that. And I will allow them to testify, although there's nobody here or online that has requested testimony. But I'm going to leave it open anyway at this point. With that, thank you for... really some significant work, I think, today. I have a question from my – let's take a brief at ease.
Remove your objection on the bill.
My apologies. We have the movement of the members that came before us, and I would like to read, if it's all right with you, that in accordance with Alaska Statute 3905.080, the Senate Judiciary Standing Committee reviewed the following and recommends the appointment be forwarded to a joint session for consideration. That is, Commission on Judicial Conduct, we had Jane Moores and Robert Sheldon here before us. And on the State Board of Parole, we had Latoni Tupou. I would like for the members to stay and sign that paper before they go. All right?
Mr. Chairman, signing the paper does not indicate whether or not
please continue.
A member will vote for or against any of those members in a confirmation hearing.
Thank you very much, Vice Chair, for keeping me straight on this one. All right, stay and sign your paper. With that, we're adjourned. Sorry about running us.